Hello, friends. I'm Marissa Blackwood, and welcome to All Things Murder. Welcome to All Things Murder, the show that dives into real true crime cases that inspired pop culture movies and shows we know today. I'm Marissa Blackwood, and we've all heard of Bonnie and Clyde, right? You know, the murderous thieving lovers, otherwise known as the Great Depression serial killers, who committed a series of crimes from 1931 to 1934. 52 years later, another couple became the Bonnie and Clyde version of Australia that inspired the movie Hounds of Love that was loosely based off this murderous couple. Oh yeah, for today, my friends, we'll be discussing David and Catherine Burney, whose crimes are referred to in the press as the Morehouse Murders. Listener's discretion is advised. If you're a fan of horror movies or true crime, or perhaps both like myself, don't forget to like and subscribe. Also, don't forget to check us out on YouTube at All Things Murder. New episodes on Thursdays. David Burney was the oldest of five children and grew up in Wattle Grove, Western Australia, which was a semi-rural suburb of Perth. His school friends and acquaintances from church remember the family as being very dysfunctional, and there was a lot of rumors involving alcoholism, promiscuity, and incest. Ugh. Guys, incest is gross. Don't do that, please. By 1961, David's parents got divorced when he was just 10, and he was expected to take care of his five siblings. His parents were like, "You got this, right?" Like, "Dude, no, come back, come back." At 15, David began working at a horse racing track. During his time there, he often physically harmed the horses, and after he exposed himself to a young lady, he got fired. Yeah, I would think abusing the animals and, you know, showing your dick to people, yeah, that's a fireable offense, for sure. It was around that time where he met Catherine. Catherine Burney, born Harrison, was also born in 1951. She was 2 years old when her mother, Doreen, died giving birth to her brother, who died 2 days later. Jesus, that is so sad. Unable to cope with it, her father, Harold, just sent her away to live with her grandparents. Like, "I can't deal with this child. I had too much trauma just happen to me. Just go. Just go with your grandparents. It'll be best." When she was around 10, there was a custody dispute where Catherine's dad gained sole custody of Catherine again. He's like, "Okay, all right, I changed my mind. I want the kid back." At the age of 12, she met David Burney. Yes, 12. And by the age of 14, she was in a relationship with David. Harold begged Catherine on several occasions to leave David due to the fact that she was getting into trouble with local police all the damn time because of her bad boy boyfriend. "He's a bad influence, Catherine. You should get rid of him." "No, Daddy, I love him." You know, if you push too hard, you're just gonna push her right into his arms, and that's exactly what happened. Since the disapproval of the relationship just strengthened their union. Catherine quickly became pregnant with their first child, and these two teenagers just were so happy with the new life they're bringing in the world. Like, "Yeah, we don't know what the hell we're doing. Let's bring a baby into the world, idiots." They started committing crimes, including petty theft and burglary. It wasn't long after their crime spree that both David and Catherine were sent to Perth Police Court for 11 counts of criminal activity, including $3,000 worth of stolen goods and breaking and entering. They also admitted to trying to crack open a safe at the local drive-in. Like, really, guys? David was sent to a correctional institution for 9 months, while Catherine, who was pregnant, was placed on probation. When it was revealed that the two teenagers had committed 8 further crimes of breaking and entering, yet David was sent to prison for 3 years, and Catherine was given probation for 4 years. Catherine's first child with David was then taken away by welfare workers. After some time in the detention center, she realized that we should probably, you know, break up. And they departed and married other people and tried to live a new life. Like, "Okay, let's just give each other a clean slate here, okay? Okay." Encouraged by a parole officer, Catherine began working for the McLaughlin family as a housekeeper. She then married Donald McLaughlin on her 21st birthday. This girl's just jumping from dude to dude at a very young age. Now, with Catherine growing up without a mom or a proper parental figure, she did not know how to take care of a house. So her home was disgusting, okay? Just filthy. Nasty. Proving to be a terrible wife, Catherine attempted to raise her 5 children in squalor. Just bleh, nasty, nasty, nasty. Catherine's first child with Donald was just an infant at the time, was hit by a car and it died. Like, how sad is her life story so far? Catherine witnessed the death and obviously was deeply affected by her child dying, and she just immersed herself in violence and murder. Catherine had never forgotten her first love, David, and soon just ditched her family and abandoned them to be with David, whom she was still secretly seeing for 2 years. She's like, okay, this isn't working out anymore. I'm just gonna go back to David. Things were better with David. Ooh. After 13 years apart, David and Catherine quickly reunited. I missed you, baby. Oh, I missed you too. Though they never formally married, Catherine did take David's last name and became his common-law wife. The couple moved into 3 Morehouse Street, Willoughby, out just outside of Perth. Now, David might have been the love of Catherine's life, but David, on the other hand, had an unquenchable and insustainable need for sex, demanding it 6 times a day. Holy shit. If a guy is asking you for sex 6 times a day, he's either really awesome or that's a red flag. But 6 times a day, I'm gonna say that is excessive. That's a lot. My legs are numb just thinking about that. When Catherine refused, you know, I don't wanna have sex 6 times a day, David turned to his brother, yeah, James, with whom he had some kind of incestuous relationship with. Guys, what have I said? I understand. Game of Thrones is a great show. House of Dragon, even greater. That does not mean you need to commit incest. No. No, 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 no. On James's 21st birthday, David's gift to him was sex with his wife. And David just sat there and watched, like, oh yeah. He got off to his wife boning his brother. Happy birthday, bro. Like, yeah, that's right. Give it to my wife. What is wrong with people? I mean, you're into what you're into, but I think that's weird. You boned your brother and your lady, and now you're like, let's just share. Everyone share. His brother James would later admit to police that David injected him with a needle filled with cocaine to the tip of his penis to enhance the experience. So his brother drugged him. Fantastic. The killings. Since David needed so much sexual gratification all the time, you damn sex addict, and had no fears of asserting himself on someone who was willing or unwilling to have him, Catherine and David decided that they would rape young women was the answer to the problem. Yeah, yeah, if I can't give it to you, let's just go ruin someone's life. David assured Catherine that she would achieve amazing and unprecedented orgasm by watching her husband rape a bound and gag woman. And she believed him. She's like, really? Is that how I get a great orgasm? Witnessing such a horrible event? Wow. I just want to slap her. Just want to slap her around. Victim number 1. To find their first victim, David advertised cheap tires in the local paper, and soon enough, a young woman answered the ad. I mean, come on. Cheap tires? We all would have answered that ad. Tires are frickin' expensive. Everything is expensive nowadays. I can only imagine then. On October 6, 1986, Mary Nelson, who was 22 years old, knocked on the door of their house at 3 Moore Street. This tiny house was overgrown with weeds and dead flowers and was badly in need of a repainting. Clearly, the house looked run down. David then chained Mary to the bed and raped her while Catherine watched. Unsatisfied with that, he found that he needed more to feel fulfilled. Ugh, that wasn't enough for me. He wanted blood on his hands. David and Catherine drove Mary to Glen Eagle State Forest, where she was raped again. David strangled her with a nylon stocket while she tried to beg for mercy. David stabbed Mary and mutilated her body, burying her in a shallow grave near Armadale. Victim number two. Approximately 2 weeks later, the couple picked up a 15-year-old hitchhiker named Susanna Candy, who was an excellent student at Hollywood High School. She was kept in their home as a prisoner for several days while being sexually assaulted by David. This time, Catherine joined into the relations, and David was just so happy that they had a threesome. The couple forced her to write two letters to her parents to assure them that she was safe and well and that she'd be coming home soon. But Susanna figured out she would not be coming home anytime soon. The two killers could not have, you know, Susanna identify them, of course not. So Catherine, in a jealous rage, strangled Susanna because she thought David was giving her too much attention. Like, are you freaking kidding me right now? Body was later buried next to Mary Nielsen. Victim number three. The next victim of the Burnies was a friend of theirs, a 31-year-old air hostess, Nolene Patterson. The Burnies had helped her decorate her home, and she felt quite safe when they picked her up when she ran out of gas on the road. Like, oh, my friends are here. Oh, thank God. No. Nolene was regarded by friends and family as an outgoing, popular, charming, and polite woman. Over a period of 3 days, she was chained to the bed and violently sexually assaulted by David in their home. Catherine, again, a jealous woman, thought that David was giving her too much affection and demanded that he kill her. I am your wife. Stop giving the victim attention. Look at me. Look at me. Catherine thought of Nolene as the woman she could never be and was not about to let David have her. Like, you are not stealing my man, girl. Because David did not want to murder someone he knew, he mercifully gave her a large dose of sleeping pills and just waited until she passed out before he strangled her. When burying her next to the other slain women, Catherine threw dirt in her face as a final goodbye to the woman she felt had been trying to steal her man. Like, what in the brain cells thinks that, yeah, the woman that you abducted is clearly trying to steal your husband? Yeah, okay, slap her. Just slap her around. Victim number four. The fourth and final victim was a 21-year-old Denise Brown, who was a computer operator. She was abducted by the Burnies on November 4th of 1986 after being picked up at a bus stop on Sterling Highway. Denise was sexually assaulted repeatedly in the Burnie home. They even made her call a friend to let her know she was safe. You know, I'm good. Don't need to look for me. All good here. Savages. Denise had an extreme injury with David's dull knife, which had not worked out as well as he expected. Catherine was like, here, honey, use this larger knife, and Denise was stabbed while David sexually assaulted her again and again. Attempting to bury her in a shallow grave, Denise actually sat up. Her knife wounds were non-fatal, so she was alive. She was just horribly injured. David struck her in the skull with an axe. When she sat up once more, David took the head of the axe and cracked her skull with it. Denise was buried on the edge of Ganaria Pine Plantation. This was the last killing to take place in a 27-day period. They did this all within like a month. Jesus. The one that got away. On November 10th of 1987, a 17-year-old girl was found running naked and crying to a supermarket in Fremantle. She told police she had been abducted and forced into a car while walking through the wealthy area of Netlands, which was a suburb of Perth. The men and women that had taken her had brought her into their home, where she was chained to a bed and was sexually assaulted. She claimed that the woman that abducted her watched the entire time. The only reason this girl had escaped was when David went to work and Catherine freed her from her chains. Interesting. The girl escaped the home from a window in the bedroom. Although this girl was deeply disturbed after all that has happened to her, she was able to identify the house, the phone number, and the faces of the people who abducted her. Like, they live at this address. Let me tell you their names. Okay. David was said to have an abnormally long, hooked nose, and Catherine was described as a mid-30s short woman with a permanent frown and high cheekbones. Yeah, I'd have a permanent frown too after all this woman's done. The arrest. A detective sergeant, Paul Ferguson, was the prime investigator on the case and quickly realized that he was dealing with the serial killer. I'm glad this cop was smart. After the description of the 17-year-old, Ferguson understood that the girl had positively seen the faces of the killers, suggesting there might have been a motive to letting her go. It's like, what? These people have sexually assaulted and killed people. Why would they let you go? Interesting. The Burnies knew they had been caught right after that girl was found. Like, oh, she got us. Catherine and David were taken from their home and interrogated by police. David, of course, claimed that the young girl had willingly gone to the house to smoke some weed and also willingly to have sex with David. David's such a narcissist, like, ugh, all the ladies want me. They just want me for my weed and my wiener. Ugh, I'm the shit, cops. No, you are not. To prove that she had actually been in the house, this girl, smart girl, left her bag and cigarettes in the ceiling of the house. Hey, that is my marker. That's my shit. David confessed first and gave specific details on where each body was buried and was quite chatty and cheerful when leading police to bodies. Yeah, this is where they are. Like, what? Catherine confessed soon after. Catherine took the police to the site of Susanna's body. Catherine seemed to have lost all morality intact, just said of Susanna. She said, quote, "She was a female. Females hurt and destroy males." Catherine then showed the police where Noeline was buried, you know, having a particular disgust with the deceased woman, as we know why. Remember her favorite victim? She spit on the grave in front of police. Like, Catherine, this is not making you look any better, woman. She admitted that she hated this woman for captivating her husband. When police asked Catherine what was her reason for her involvement in the murders, she said she was just so in love with David, she just couldn't say no to him. You couldn't say no. If my man asked me to go kidnap some girls so he can sexually assault them and kill them, that's a big red flag. No, that's a no. No, honey, I can say no to you. A 19-year-old student came forward after the murders hit the news. She claimed she was walking home from the university when a couple tried to pick her up. She felt uneasy about getting in the car when she saw what she assumed was somebody, a young boy or a girl, unconscious in the back seat. That was the body of Denise Brown, who was drugged by the sleeping pills and was passed out. The student was like, no thank you, and the car drove away. She gave the description of the driver and the woman in the passenger seat matched perfectly with Catherine and David Burney. Upon searching the Burney home, police found an advertisement in a newspaper circled in red ink. It read, "Urgent, looking for a lonely person. Prefer female, 18 to 24 years. Share single room flat." That's a big no for me. No, thank you. I'm looking for a lonely person? Like, no, I'm okay. Catherine confessed right away that she had been a willing accomplice in the crimes, even photographing David raping some of the young women. Like, what is wrong with these people? It was also claimed that although she was jealous of these women, she took great pleasure in watching David have sex with the victims. Oh, Catherine, you need Jesus. Psychiatrists and detectives were disturbed by Catherine's obsession with David. Yeah, I am too. Her entire life was devoted to this piece of shit of a man, and she would help him find, abduct, and sexually assault, and finally kill each woman they found together. She's like, this is our way of couples bonding. This was date night. Catherine, oh my God, no. David sucks. Catherine signed a detailed statement admitting her part in the murders. In her confession, she claimed that she had freed the last 17-year-old girl because she felt the murders would go on forever if they didn't stop now. She's like, should probably pump the brakes on this now. I'll let you go. She did admit that she enjoyed murdering and sexually assaulting the women, but just wanted it to end. Like, oh, thank you, I guess? No, you're still a terrible person. David admitted to the rape and murder of 4 women and pled guilty for each of the murders, as he should. He believed that showing a great deal of remorse would help his case. Bitch, we know you're not remorseful. When he tried to show himself as like a sorrowful sex addict, like, oh, I have a problem, I need help. And he had no choice but to murder his victims so they couldn't identify him. Guys, please, I just need help, not prison. While awaiting his trial, inmates in jail attacked him. Karma. And he ended up needing medical attention. Catherine fell to her knees when she heard that David was hurt in jail. Like, no! David, no! Not my David! On November 12th, 1986, Catherine and David stood trial at Fremantle Magistrates Court, charged with 4 counts of murder and rape. Catherine and David were to serve 4 consecutive life sentences in prison and were eligible for parole in 20 years. Mr. Justice Wallace told the court that David Burney was, quote, should not be let out of prison ever. I agree with you, sir. I agree with you. Catherine Burney was sent to Bandy Up Prison in Northern Perth, while David was to serve his time at Fremantle Prison. Neither Catherine or David appealed their sentence. Yeah, no, that would have been denied immediately, even if they did. After they left the courtroom, the public screamed and threw garbage at David, hollering for him to die. He smiled and blew them a kiss. Like, what a jackass. David continued his violent temperament even in prison and was often in the middle of fights, beaten up, and spent much of his time in prison infirmary. For 4 years, the couple exchanged a total of 2,600 letters. That's a lot of damn letters. Though they were denied any direct contact or visits. Yeah, I would deny that too. These two never need to be together ever, 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 ever again. In 1990, David claimed that being apart from Catherine was just sending him into complete physical and mental breakdown that would eventually cause him to commit suicide. He was like, I could not be without Catherine, so he just ended it. The judge refused a reunion between David and Catherine despite his frantic plea. He's like, I need my baby. Please, judge, I'm gonna die in here. And the judge is like, yeah, that's the point, no. Although he was devoted to Catherine, in 1993, David's personal computer was confiscated by prison officials, where, oh my God, they found evidence of an enormous amount of porn. Like, so much porn. Apparently, David was suffering from a severe sex addiction, even in prison. At 4:30 a.m. on October 2nd of 2005, 55-year-old David Burney was found hanged in his cell at Perth Casuarina Prison. Catherine was not allowed to go to his funeral. She was denied parole in 2007 and again in 2010, her paperwork stating never to be released. Only 2 other women promised parole had ever been given that particular punishment. And that, my friends, is the messed up story of David and Catherine Burney, the Bonnie and Clyde of Australia. Rest in peace to their victims. These people were so fucked up. Thank you all so much for joining me. I'm Marissa Blackwood, and don't forget to tune in next week for a new All Things Murder, if you dare.